This is a recording of the public hearing on Website and Internet Communications Improvement Initiative held by the Federal Election Commission on July 29, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We convene our open session, and I know all of you were here this morning for the first panel, and so thank you very much for being there, and you kind of know the procedure. We'll go for the allotted period of time and start with whatever comments you want to make, and take as much time as you wish. I will then break it into informal discussion. From your comments, I can tell that there will be a need for some translation. And therefore, please forgive us if we have to ask you some fairly basic questions, but we're sure looking forward to your information. We'll begin in alphabetical order, and we have with us Matt DeBurgolis, I did it, who's chairman and founder of Act Blue, Paul Houteling from Political CFOs, who's the founder. How'd I do? Not so good.
It's actually Houteling.
Thank you. And Nathaniel Perlman, who's the founder of NGP Software, Inc. Thank you all for being here. And we'll start with Mr. DeBurgolis.
Oh, you had it the first time.
I had it the first time today.
Well, thank you to the chairman and the commission as a whole. I think this is a wonderful approach to asking these questions, and I certainly appreciate the open setting to begin this process. I think it's appropriate for the kinds of questions that are before us. My name is Matt DeBurgolis. I'm the founder and chairman of Act Blue. We are a federal political action committee, as well as a similar committee in 20-some-odd states. And we are now the nation's largest source of earmarked federal funds for candidates and federal committees. And I speak here with two perspectives. One is as a filer. We have, of course, our own filing obligations as a result of our activities. I think we've filed several million individual compliance events over the course of the last cycle, and we certainly have some experience and some opinions based on that activity. But the other perspective is as an advocate. Our mission as a political committee is to improve transparency in political fundraising, to document more of what's happening and the why behind what's happening. So we go far beyond what the federal regulations require in terms of disclosure. We share information about the fundraisers that have brought in funds, what they're saying, who they're communicating with, what the communities are that are giving money. We feel that that offers a deeper understanding of the political fundraising process. And so we applaud any effort to increase transparency or accessibility to the kind of political fundraising data that the commission works with. We do all of this in real time, and we found in many cases that we're the only real way to have insight into the fundraising activity of a campaign between the quarterly filing deadlines that the candidates have to file against. And so, again, I applaud the effort, and I think that there's an opportunity here in front of the commission to improve both the form in which data is collected and also the ability for third parties to take advantage of that data and teach us more about political fundraising and the environment that it's taking place in. And essentially, my testimony carried three recommendations, and I just want to walk through them quickly and then, of course, leave as much time for questions as possible. And forgive me if some of the testimony wasn't as clear as it could be, and I'll try to elaborate on that at the moment. The centerpiece of it is to think of the commission's responsibility in terms of data as the custodian of the data itself. What I mean by that is that the currency of this is all the individual events that have taken place, the contributions to committees, the expenditures from committees, and the goal is to document those and to publish them in a form that anyone can view but also analyze. And to the degree that that's done in a way that the data is well documented and well structured and has clear meaning is, I think, what's required for independent groups to be able to make the best use of that data. And so One example of that is around identifying donors as individuals and aggregating amounts that they've given. Of course, this is a classic question, but it turns out to be a hard problem to solve. And the commission is in a unique position to address that, not simply because it's a hard challenge, but because it's the sort of question that demands a single answer. There needs to be a clear canonical answer as to when two donors are the same person, when two employers are the same, when two vendors are the same. And that's the sort of task that I think is well suited for any effort the commission makes to change its own model of the data. If that's done correctly, the door is opened for any number of third parties, as well as the commission itself, to publish information and to aggregate and analyze that information. So the existing maps on the front page of the website, I think, are a great example. But needless to say, there are many groups that will leap at any opportunity to reanalyze and reform the raw facts, if you will, the individual amounts that a donor is given over the course of a cycle, or the individual vendors to whom a campaign has sent money. And there are many that do that today, but the commission has a chance to, I think, improve the quality of data that they're working with and then rely on them and leverage them for their own energies and their own kind of approach to how to demonstrate political activity to the public. The second recommendation is to do this using industry best practices for data formats and for protocols, which is to say how you move data to the commission as a filer and how you retrieve the information as an interested party who wants to analyze it or ask questions of it. And there's a great depth of industry standards here that would make sense. I think these recommendations are ones that you'll hear from many different groups and people. Essentially, the more accessible data is, the more that it's provided in a form that modern software already has toolkits that they can work with that data, the more that people will do with it. And unfortunately, the current state of affairs is such that essentially any work with the data, again, both as a filer to send data to the commission or as an analyst to pull data out, requires completely custom software. It doesn't typically allow you to leverage existing toolkits. Certainly nothing that we work with at the federal level helps us with state compliance. And again, just limits the scope of what individuals and organizations outside the commission might potentially do with that data. I recommended formats like XML as a classic industry standard. It's not the only choice, but it's certainly one that would give you a set of tools to work with. And on the protocol side, the goal is to not have to rely on a particular software package, such as FECFile, to input data into the system. And the story there is that when the software works for someone, that's great, but when it doesn't, the options today are very limited. And I speak as someone for whom FECFile is not an option, so we've had to do a great deal of custom work to work around that problem, and I think that's a place the commission can improve upon. And finally, I recommend that the whole process be open. I've never seen a successful industry standard for data format or for protocols that wasn't done as an open process. Those that are done behind closed doors, published by a single company, tend to fail. They don't meet the needs of the community, and they haven't baked in the feedback from the community. I recommend that the output be open source. I don't see any reason why the commission shouldn't provide its system and these tools as a starting point for others to work with. I think there's nothing but good that comes of that sort of sharing. And done right, I think this serves as a template, not just for federal compliance and for working with compliance data, but also in other settings where in states, for example, the resources just simply aren't available to build a model of data and a set of toolkits and best practices and frankly, a public rationale for why these decisions were made and how they were made. And so those are the three recommendations, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hauteling.
Good morning. I'm Paul Hauteling. Good
morning.
Founder of Political CFOs. I actually prepared a statement just to make sure that I cover everything and I get through it and everybody understands what I'm talking about, because I tend to ramble a bit. I want to thank the commission for inviting me here and to speak at this forum, but I also want to take a minute just to give a brief overview of my history as a compliance consultant, because that's what I do, and a short explanation of what political CFOs does, because I believe that's something a little bit different than what people are used to hearing, or who people are used to hearing from. I think it's important as part of the discussion to have a good understanding of why the Commission thought it might be helpful for me to participate in this panel. I personally have spent the last 18-plus years working in the political campaign compliance field at various levels. I've worked for congressional campaigns for the U.S. House and Senate, as well as state party committees throughout the country. Spent 4.5 years heading up the Democratic National Committee's compliance division from its inception in December of 1996 through April of 2001. I've served as compliance director, comptroller, committee treasurer, and CFO for a presidential campaign. I've also probably held some unofficial titles that I've been given that I wasn't aware of. Oftentimes, I explain to clients, my job is not to tell you how to spend your money, but to tell you how to spend it legally and report it correctly. In terms of your spending, quote, I won't tell you no, I'll tell you how. In April of 2004, I formed Political CFOs. Political CFOs is a small firm. The city of Alexandria employ 4 to 12 people, depending upon the cycle. We provide compliance and financial oversight services for committees to a whole range of clients. We provide services to candidate committees, many of which are registered with, submit reports to the Federal Election Commission. We also provide services for federal PACs and to several state party committees. The majority of these clients are outside the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. For all of them, the work we do is heavily reliant on the Internet, not only for the accounting services we provide, but for the reporting purposes and general communication. Without the Internet, political CFOs could not exist in its current format. Why is all of this important? I believe through the work that we do at Political CFOs, like others in our profession, we offer a very unique perspective. Because we have many clients from many states across the country, clients that interact with the FEC for many different reasons, we are often seeking information from the FEC on their behalf. We interact on a regular basis with the Reports Analyst Division, occasionally with the Office of General Counsel, every now and then with the Audit Division, and hopefully only rarely with Alternative Dispute Resolution. My employees often attend the FEC trainings that are held, and of course the FEC's website for information almost daily. A case in point, I have one of my employees check the FEC's website for RFAIs that have been issued at least once a week to see if they have been issued for any of our clients. We get them online before our clients get them in the mail and tell us about them. Our perspective gives us a unique insights that most individuals, frankly, don't get. For example, we interact with many different analysts in the Reports Analyst Division. We get to know the standard kinds of questions that they are being asked on RFAIs, and we know how a committee needs to answer them. We also can see the subtle nuances in the way different analysts will review a particular client's report. Additionally, we experience many different ways our various clients seek to define the way in which they want us to address their compliance and financial oversight issues. Campaigns or political organizations come in many different sizes and are organized in many different ways. And every client has a different and unique way of operating. There are as many campaign varieties as there are people in this room. Despite difference in organization setups and operations, however, we're all here for the same reason: to provide as best we can full disclosure for the public record and accurate accounting of the receipts and expenditures of a committee's registered with the FEC. When I first got started in this business, there was no internet to speak of. The internet was in its infancy. There were no websites. Email was barely more than a concept, and the idea of electronic filing was not on anyone's radar screen. I began working in this field at a time when, as I'm sure many of you can still remember, all reports were filed on paper format. That was less than a decade ago. I can recall arriving at the FEC on filing days, unloading 6 to 7 copier boxes filled with paper out of the trunk of someone's car as we were parked out in front of the FEC. These were quarterly reports for the DNC that were 5,000 pages longer. We'd bring them into the building with a hand truck. I also remember the days when almost all the information from the FEC, be it copies of the regulations, campaign guides, or a committee's previously filed reports, were obtained by either calling the FEC's information desk through the 800 number or, in many cases, making a personal appearance in this building. I'm taking this trip down memory lane to illustrate a simple point. It has been less than 15 years since the internet has really begun to impact all of our lives. It's probably even less than that when you consider that the first version of the FEC's website didn't occur until 1996, only 13 years ago. Not a very long time at all when you consider the lifespan of the FEC, which has been around for a little over 34 years now. The bottom line, the FEC and the people who work here should be commended for their job they have done with regards to the information that is available at our fingertips these days, all from the confines of our desktops or any other computer terminal, anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night, 365 days a year. No more hand trucks, far fewer calls to the 800 number. And when was the last time any of us waited for the printed information we requested from the FEC to arrive through the U.S. mail? However, we're here at the request of the Commission to recommend, as regular users of the system, how you can improve on what you have built so far and make it better. Not only for us, the people who make our living in the business of compliance, but for the general public. After all, the FEC exists primarily for the purposes of facilitating the dissemination of committee activity, information relating to the laws governing the raising and spending of money by federal campaigns and other FEC matters. So in an effort to live up to the request of the Commission for my input, I'd like to begin by stating there are far too many things that I would like to suggest here today than any of us have time for. I, too, have gotten spoiled by what I'm able to get at the click of a mouse, and I, too, am always wanting more. First, there seems to be a common desire among many who have written with comments that we ought to be able to search the database for disbursements as well as contributions. At Political CFOs, we often find ourselves seeking information regarding a prospective client's level of disbursement activity, particularly levels of personnel and payroll. Second, it'd be nice if there was a greater degree of flexibility in the way a user is able to search the data. Let's face it, each visitor to the FEC's website is seeking different information and wants it presented in a different manner than the next person. Any increase in the flexibility which a visitor can dissect the data would be helpful. Third, I think some consolidation of the various sections of the site could be undertaken, if for no other reason than to streamline the process getting to where we want to go. Case in point is the portion of the site that we use quite often to access reports and or amendments that have been filed, RFAIs, and statements of organization. If you want to download report data, it is much more difficult and confusing sometimes to locate the report or amendment you are looking for. If you want to view a particular report, it may be easier to find it, but you won't be able to download the data from that portion of the site. Fourth and final point, the FEC's training department has been conducting trainings for campaigns, PACs, state parties for as long as I can remember. They've gotten pretty darn good at it. However, those trainings traditionally are only held during the spring and summer months of even-numbered years. Most colleges and universities today are providing online courses. It'd be useful if the FEC would begin providing a lot of the training content online as well, and I know that was brought up in the previous segment of this. As I mentioned, the list could continue, such as notifications of RFAIs for a committee by email when they are raised. That way my folks wouldn't have to dredge through the website to get them. Improvements to the FEC file program. Some of these issues I present in the written comments I submitted to the forum. One final note. In preparation for my appearance here today, I took the opportunity over the weekend to read many of the written comments that have been submitted by others. There are a lot of them, covering a wide range of interests from an equally wide range of users. Many of them I agree with, others I may not. However, I suspect many of them would likely be implemented by the Commission as a result of the dialogue you have initiated. I think it's worth pointing out that I obtained copies of the documents that have been filed through the FEC's website, and I did this from my home on Saturday morning at approximately 7 a.m. while sitting at my home computer while drinking my first cup of coffee in the morning. I also was able to download many of them as Adobe documents to my local drive for further review on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Once again, I commend the Commission for the progress that has been made so far in their efforts. If you compare where we began just 13 years ago to where we are today, one can only imagine where we'll be in a few years or 13 more years from now. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Mr. Perlman.
I'm Nathaniel Perlman. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today.
Thanks for being here.
My experience with FEC reporting and political finance, like Paul's, goes back more than two decades. As a programmer, starting in 1988, I've written three different campaign software packages. I was also a doctoral candidate in political science at MIT, where I used FEC data in academic models. I was chief technology officer for a presidential campaign in the last cycle, where we managed complex data and a large compliance operation. I started NGP software in 1997. NGP software files thousands of reports with the FEC, but manages information about a campaign supporters far beyond what is reported. NGP now has more than 1,000 clients, including about 80% of federal Democrats, many PACs and state parties, the DNC, the DSCC, and the DCCC. We have clients in every state and are intimately aware of how compliance is handled in those states. By handling as many filers as we do, I'm confident we buffer the FEC from numerous inquiries and problems. I've also been a donor to federal campaigns, so I have a decent background to think about the FEC and its use of the Internet. I'm not a big critic of the FEC on technology matters. FEC Electronic Filing Office has worked closely with us for a long time, as it has with all software vendors. We've seen the electronic filing program grow and mature through two presidential cycles. There have been difficulties and issues that we've had to work through, but we've always been able ultimately to get the filings done. FEC has also been a reliable source of data, and my academic friends are generally fans. I do have some recommendations, which I submitted in written form already, and which I'll go over quickly in a minute. But I'd like to take a quick moment to explain where I see the FEC fitting into the political technology ecosphere, because that informs my recommendations. From a campaign perspective, it's important to realize that the filing of FEC reports, though legally required, is just a byproduct of campaign activity. It's not the center, it's the periphery of a campaign's operation. Sizable campaigns and other filing entities face the challenge of managing multiple data types and streams for their missions, which far exceed what is needed for disclosure. That includes traditional fundraising, which is list management and call sheets and call time tracking, tracking of pledges, notes on donors, nowadays online fundraising and blast email and processing of contributions, distributed campaigning and connection to all kinds of online tools, and voter and supporter and event tracking. Our continuing challenge is to provide a platform where we can represent all these types of data, as well as embody the complex rules of FEC or state filing, the earmark contributions, the in-kinds, the partnerships, etc. Wow. Someone must know I'm here. My brother. So we're tracking many, many pieces of data which have no relevance to the FEC, but the integration with disclosure data is a very important component to the effective operation of a campaign. So the FEC is part of a data universe that far exceeds compliance. With all the varied data that the campaign or PAC software now manages, while working on improving disclosure, the FEC should not be at all in the business of building campaigning tools. The other part of the ecosphere includes the compliance consultants, the law firms, the other political software companies, campaigns, PACs, party committees. Most of these entities now have people who've learned a complex system for disclosure with numerous rules and interfaces. They've been to your trainings. Any of the changes that you make to the disclosure system will impact all of them. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to restate what's in my written statement, but I want to go quickly over a couple recommendations. We echo the comments of the Sunlight Foundation with respect to making the FEC's website more user-friendly, employing plain language, and updating the search technologies. The FEC has a lot of data that can be exposed more cleanly, and this should be a priority. For instance, you should be able to subscribe as a committee to the FEC website and get a feed of what relevant things happen to you. You shouldn't have to wait for something to come in the mail or go searching for it. That could be automated just like you can subscribe to a blog nowadays. In the context of making contribution data easier to use, the FEC could balance the exposure that donors now get to unwanted solicitation from appearing on these lists. Most donors to campaigns are not buying influence. They are participating in the democracy and supporting candidates of their choice. The FEC currently allows salting of a report with fake donors so that other campaigns or organizations who download FEC information and then use it for fundraising purposes can be caught. Hardly anyone, however, salts their data because it's a pain. Our suggestion is the FEC could implement salting system-wide, thereby better protecting all donors. We also think that the FEC can improve the quality of its data by enforcing higher data standards. And this could be done very quickly and inexpensively in the current context by tightening up the validation on the fact-check module. You could just not accept reports that don't hit certain standards. There's been some talk about from Matt about publishing the code for vendor tools, making that available. I think that makes some sense. This would allow current and new vendors to more easily and completely integrate their software for filing. We've been through an arduous process in doing that. It could be vastly improved by input from the outside. I don't agree, however, that the same should be done with FECFile. I think FECFile currently serves its purpose pretty well. It serves as a standard for disclosure that commercial applications need to mimic. Users of FECFile are pretty well served. It's free. It's the program of choice for small operations, many which don't have reliable web connections and are accustomed to the quick entry and easy navigation of a desktop product. The FEC should remember that changing an application interface will result in substantial headaches for a user community that's accustomed to the current way of doing things. And I think that the FECFile software should be managed by the FEC, which has a mission responsibility for filing standards. One other suggestion I made was that you could diminish the last-minute rush to file at every deadline by embargoing the display of reports until after the filing deadline. That way, you would not have a rush on your servers necessarily at the last minute. We would not have on our technical support. Someone is done with a report 3 days early, let them submit it. Right now, a lot of them are holding it because they don't want the press exposure early. You shouldn't penalize them for doing their homework. So I'm really supportive of improvements to the FEC website, which would make data more accessible. I'm more cautious about a wholesale revamping of your working disclosure systems. Remember that what moves you make changes for the whole complex ecosystem that's spun up around your work. It's been quite a process over many years to get things working as well as they are today. You may hear from technologists who suggest that rewriting things from scratch, but remember that many big technology projects always seem to run way over budget and take way longer than expected, and in many cases end up in failure, and you end up rewinding to previous systems at work. So I lean to an incremental approach to improvement. There's a lot that can be done, and a lot that's been recommended in the comments that you've received that can be done in this way. The first step should be to ascertain what questions people are asking about FEC information that cannot be easily answered by what you have right now. I hope that today's meeting is a useful part of that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's all very helpful to all of us. As I read through these comments, I had a lot of questions, mostly because I wasn't sure of the impact of implications of some of the things you said. But are there any other questions that one the commission would like to begin with? I did have a couple of questions, if I might. And that was when you said we should improve our data architecture. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think that's more.
Let's see. Okay, but
so why don't you take that first?
Sure. It's a good question. The issue is defining with some clarity what the information that's being provided is. And let me come back to the example of the vendor search, because it's come up in a couple different settings, right? There's certainly an interest among the community to be able to ask which committees are spending money with a given vendor, you know, where is that income stream coming from, and so forth. And it's true that you can solve that by building a vendor search form, much like you can currently use the site to search for donors. What I was getting at is that the deeper solution to that problem is to clarify in the data set that the FEC holds, the list of all the donations that have come in and the expenses that have gone out, to clarify what the relevant information is, and to define a way of identifying a given vendor and a standard by which vendors are considered the same. I mean, addresses vary a little bit here and there. Business names can vary a little bit here and there. It's the same challenge that we face when we try to ask whether a donor has reached an aggregate limit because, again, the name spellings and so forth may change. And so typically committees and groups will use some sort of heuristic to decide whether two names are in fact the same person. You can imagine doing the same with vendors. And the thing that the FEC can do that's difficult to do outside this building is to publish a standard heuristic, if you will, right? In other words, a test that the FEC considers correct to identify a particular vendor, and that the rest of the community can then leverage and use to answer whichever questions they're trying to ask. And if you do that, and what you end up with is a data mart, some will say, or a database of expenses that committees have had, and you make the database itself available, and again, there are standard industry techniques for doing this sort of thing, then people can ask whatever questions they like. And it's no longer the commission's responsibility to implement a specific type of search form, which may address certain questions but may not reach a solution for another committee that has a different kind of question they want to ask. And I think by focusing on the data itself, rather than the tools that sit on top that let you ask questions of the data, you do the part that's most difficult to do outside the building and leave the door open for independent groups. You know, the website Open Secrets, for example, does a great amount of work to build tools on top of the commission's data that allow for different types of queries. And I think you'll see a larger number of those things take place if the starting point is more consistent.
The question I have is some people, thinking in terms of what former Chairman Toner said as leveling the playing field, not everybody who looks on our website is then going to go to Open Secrets or going to go to somewhere else and know that there's the analysis done somewhere else. And so I'm wondering if should we, at least from a basic, more intuitive way, let people do some sorting of data on our website, say, you know, it could be by disbursement, for example, some basic pie charts, some things like that, that would be something that any student could get onto and be able to fool with our data in basic ways, but get some interesting information. Would that?
I don't think there's any. Just to jump in quickly, like, and then, but nothing says that can't happen. And in fact, I think that's a clear interest. There are going to be standard questions, common questions, that there's no reason not to provide simple answers to. But the design principle when in the commercial space around large data sets is that it's important to expose the data itself, because that provides any number of other avenues for analyzing it and for asking questions. That's not to say that you can't provide your own analysis tools. I think FecFile is another example. It's a useful tool. There's no reason it needs to go away. It's just to say that there's a different level to work with the data that I think would be very valuable to the community on top of that.
Feel free to chime in as you want to go along here.
So, I mean, just the same way you can right now look up yourself on the FEC website and see where you've contributed, you could expose that through a application programmer interface so that a program could look someone up and look at this data, and therefore other people could build things live against the information that you already have on it.
Would you explain quite how that might work?
Just imagine that a computer program can talk to a database, and it can send a query to that database and say, I would like everybody in this zip code. And you have to regulate that from the standpoint of the FEC and not to overwhelm your servers with particular requests. But the same things that can be returned as a query and shown on a web page can also be consumed by a program, a piece of software on the web or not.
I see.
It's interesting that I sit between these two guys because, you know, they're programmers and they both, we work with ActBlue, we work with NGP. They're very good at what they do. If I understand what he's saying and I'm understanding your question, it would be wonderful if a user like myself and what we do could get onto the FEC's website and manipulate the raw data so that I could essentially go to a committee and see what did they spend in the last 30 days of the campaign and parse that out from the website before I download the raw data. If I understand what Nathaniel is saying, is that you could have programs that would go out and reach a core data set and then manipulate the data after they have it, but not everybody's going to have that at their disposal. And I think if there was a way that that I could go on to a particular committee and analyze their data from your website to determine specific parameters before I then took that data and did more with it if I wanted to, I think that would be great. An example that I just wrote down when I was listening to their comments, I would love nothing more than to know or be able to search and find out how much the Democratic National Committee paid as a vendor to other committees. You can't really do that. I could go and I could search, you know, Maryland's data and see who gave to, you know, how much did the Democratic National Committee give to Maryland, but then I'd have to go to California and do the same thing, and I'd have to go, see, I'd have to take a numerous steps as opposed to being able to say, what did the DNC distribute as a vendor, because they're going to be listed as a vendor on a particular line item, line number. It would be nice if I could do that.
Well, what prevents you from doing that now? Is it because we don't have an open system?
I don't think it's that you can't do it. I just think it's extremely cumbersome should I want to, you know, take on that particular task.
And how would we make it quickly available to a non-expert to figure that out?
Well, I think if there were user functions on the disbursement side, and that seems to be a common request in a lot of these submitted comments, a lot of people want to be able to do it. An example would be if I went onto the website and I searched for disbursements from a particular vendor. Like Matt was saying, it would be nice to see, you know, how much was spent last cycle by campaigns to GMMB, which is a major vendor that Democrats use for mail-in media. It's pretty hard to do that system-wide. I could do it for a particular client or for a particular committee, but I can't really do it for GMMB.
What Paul's talking about is basically reporting. You have an underlying database with a lot of information on it. You have some queries that you can make on it already and return a brief report. You know, I can look up a donor. There are lots of other reports, listings, as you mentioned, pie charts, other outputs that could be concocted fairly easily off that same data. You know, that. What Matt was talking about as far as standardizing some of that data, it's a little bit tricky if you have 17 different spellings of AT&T or something to get a list of where AT&T has been involved in something, you know, where they've been paid as a vendor or whatever. So, you know, you cannot – I don't think you can force every campaign to work off a list of vendors that you have – maintained completely, because there's new entities showing up constantly. You have to give them some ability to add to that list, and it has to be a growing list over time. But the FEC could work to help standardize some of the fields that are reported on, and that could happen incrementally. It doesn't have to be, you know, a huge project where you try to do it all at once, which I think it will be challenging and time-consuming and expensive.
Another way to answer your question, I think, is to take an example of searching for a vendor. The commission could certainly implement a feature on the website that allows you to search for a vendor. There are two problems, though. The first is that the Open Secrets website has better data than you do. They've done a lot of work to clean that data up. So now I have a difficult choice. Do I use your tool against worse data? Or do I ignore your tool because I need the better data to start from? And that's what I mean by focusing on the data, right? To the degree that you don't do that, the tools sit against a lower quality starting point. The other problem is that if Open Secrets or anyone else wanted to provide a vendor search, they could just go do it tomorrow. They don't have to have a hearing. They're just going to send two people to sit down and write it, and it's going to take disturbingly short amount of time, right? So there's, I think, an opportunity.
Today is you want to make data available in the way that programs commonly read it, you know.
There seems to be a difference of opinion on that XML format among the two of couple of you, and I wondered if we might just explore the
I don't know. We want to get into an argument about data formats. What I'll say is,
well, all right. Say maybe
no. We'll just be here all day.
3 minutes and 3 minutes. Something like that.
There are different standard ways to represent data, and Nathaniel made the excellent point. What you're looking for is a standard way that allows a program to read the data, that allows you to leverage existing toolkits, right? If you write a new piece of software, you're not going to start from scratch. You're going to start with a tool that understands different XML, for example, formats. And so you're immediately working with the higher level concepts of donors and their names and their employer and occupation and so forth. What's important is that we pick formats that are used by the industry, that are modern standards, formats that bring with them those toolkits that are extendable so that other groups can add their own data to that information. And there are many different answers. I proposed XML as kind of the obvious format that lots of things are done in today. There are others. But that's, I think, what we need to strive for. The comparison is to the current data that the commission has, which is in a very specific custom form, very typical of the era when it was developed. And there's really no other toolkit you can leverage, right? It's you start from scratch, and when you're done, you have nothing but something that can use FEC data. And that's the downside, is that you're just not fitting into the current modern practices and the current toolkits that are available for developers.
I have nothing personally against XML. Use it a lot. I was just trying to make the practical point that when you're transmitting very large files at a deadline, that if you pick a format that's verbose, then you end up with potentially a problem of throughput. So what I would suggest is that you have a working disclosure system where people are transmitting this information. Afterwards, for analysis, there's no reason that information can't be supplied in something with more metadata, with more information about it, that it can be managed. I think ultimately you'll end up with more sophisticated and more modern practices, but I would take this piece by piece because you have working systems that you don't want to disrupt. So you concentrate on the output end, figuring out what are the questions people are asking that they want answered, they can't answer right now, and then you let your technologists figure out what tools to use. You never want to start with a technology and say, what can this technology do for me? Really, you want to start, what do I want to be able to do, and then figure out what the tools are that will supply that.
I see. There was one question I had too about embargoing. That's an interesting idea. As I understand it, what we would do is, or a reporter would do, would file it, but it would be held by us, and it wouldn't all be entered at the same time on our computer system and possibly jam it up based upon our capacity, but it would sit there, and then at the appropriate time, or maybe right at the end of the reporting period, it would automatically go online. Is that how it works?
Yeah, my guess would be it would be a trivial change to just not make just add some flag, don't release any of the reports until after the deadline is filed. That way, there's no advantage to someone to holding things to the last minute. It seems like a trivial change.
Just from a practical point of view, what Nathaniel's touching on, we experience all the time because we have clients. We could be done with the report for them, and we try and get them done 3-4 days ahead of time so the client can review what they're going to file, since we're the ones doing it for them. And they'll insist on waiting until 11:59 to file the report. We don't like it. We want to go home. Fortunately, we can do it from home, but the server does get jammed, and we often experience issues where, you know, it's saying that it's being accepted, but we don't really know because we haven't gotten the transmittal back from the FEC saying, yes, it's okay. I think it's a great idea, and even if it was you wait until 12:15, because what happens is as we're trying to file the reports, all the reporters are there trying to get onto the FEC to get at them and download them, and there's this convergence of you know, questions being asked and people wanting to do things, and it makes it really difficult for us to do what legally we're obligated to do, whereas those folks who are just trying to get at it afterwards, they have no legal obligation to do anything other than...
I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've had staff up till 2 a.m., past the filing deadline, negotiating with someone in electronic filing because, you know, John Kerry's presidential report wasn't accepted by the server, and we got to make sure that it was, you know, we sent it, but something went wrong. We want to make sure that, you know, it's taken as if it was submitted by the deadline. There's a lot of stuff at the end of the road which is sort of unnecessary. Now, some of it is you work for a big campaign or the DNC or something. Their compliance operation is working potentially up to the very end, and that's inevitable. And they're just slogging away and trying to add employers and occupations until the very last minute. That we can't solve with this, but it might make the servers less busy and support staff in what I call the ecosphere a little happier.
It seems like an interesting idea, and it wouldn't cost us anything if I understand it correctly.
I don't think so. Quick fix, I think.
What about the approach where we would actually we would reject a report coming to us under certain circumstances?
Well, you already reject reports right now that don't pass validation. So,
and validation, is it okay the way it is, or you said maybe have a higher standard?
I think so. I mean, I think there's, and you know, I think there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that some things are being allowed to be filed by, you know, without incomplete data. That could be tightened up a lot, and you could start to promulgate standards through that process right away. Just say, all right, everybody needs to do this a little bit differently, and your report is going to be rejected by the validator until it complies.
Thank you. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple questions. Picking up kind of where the discussion was leaving off. So it is true that when the reporting deadline comes and goes, people are still frantically reporting and trying to get their reports in. I bring that up because Congress has given us the administrative fine program, which is on the one hand good because it allows for consistency, and you know if you're late, you're going to get a fine. The downside is, you know, sometimes we don't have a lot of discretion on that. So I think the embargo idea, to the extent it works, makes some sense, and we probably have to think through that some more. But Paul, if I could ask you, you raise FECFile, which is, you know, the software the FEC provides to the rest of the folks who don't necessarily hire or have the money to hire the pros, and you raise some issues with FECFile, particularly with an inability to sort of cross check for accuracy because campaigns have their own databases, right? Your fundraiser has their database, you may have a compliance database, and you have to put it in the FECFile. And FECFile doesn't, as I read your comments, doesn't really let you make sure that what you're filing is really what you wanted to file. I mean, it's just kind of garbage in, garbage out, but there's not an easy way to sort of cross-reference what you're doing as understanding. Could you flesh that out a little bit and maybe educate
sure.
on the, like, how FECFile
really
works?
And we do have clients that don't use NGP or Aristotle or any other software that'd be purchased, and they use FecFile, and they'll hire us to do, you know, to do what we do for any other client. I hate to say the problem with FecFile, particularly when you compare it to another vendor software like NGP, is there is no function within FecFile to essentially help with the human factor, what I call it, whereas I'm going to take my accounting data and I'm going to compare that against what I potentially am going to report. In a systematic way, I can't really check it off to make sure that all of the disbursements that are supposed to be in there are, in fact, every disbursement that's in my accounting system. And for those of us that do this, we live in a world where, you know, from an accountant's perspective, we're dealing with accrual-based accounting, and the FEC software and all the other software is cash-based accounting, and you want to see exactly what happened, when it happened, did it happen, did it not happen, what's reality. And I think if there was anybody here from one of the audit teams, they would tell you if it didn't happen on your bank statement, it didn't happen. If it happened on your bank statement, you better report it, and that's the point where we jump off at Political CFOs, is we take what happened with the bank and we translate that to an accounting system, and then we go the final step, which is make sure that what happened that's been reconciled on your accounting system to the bank is then accounted for in the report. FecFile is very difficult to do that with, particularly from the disbursement side, because you don't have the kind of reports from inside the program to produce just a simple list of disbursements. If you were, for instance, going to print out a report for H-4 details for a state party, you're not going to get a report that says on this date you wrote a check for $1,000. You're going to get a report that says that there was an expenditure that was made, and this is how the federal and non-federal portions of that expenditure came, got reported. It doesn't really show you. Just show me the expenditures. I'll figure out whether the allocation ratio was right afterwards. I just want to make sure there's everything in there. You can't do that.
Programming-wise, how much of a fix is it, or is it worth trying to fix FecFile to allow for more ability to cross-check work?
Well, I think it's critical, because unless you're willing to expend the inordinate amount of time necessary to do that, which I can't speak to all the campaigns that we don't do work for, I would suggest that they are not doing every bit of that detail to make sure that every disbursement gets accounted for and put into the report exactly the way it's supposed to be, you know, accounted for. I think it would go, you know, make a huge step to ensuring or helping to ensure that these smaller campaigns that don't have the resources to pay for additional software and are relying on FecFile to file more accurate reports. This is kind of a side topic. I think I mentioned it to Brad in our telephone conversations. There is nothing in the regulations, there is nothing in the reporting structure, there's nothing that the FEC does that requires any political committee that files with the FEC to ensure and confirm that their numbers are accurate. I could file a report for the next 2 years and be $50,000 off on my cash on hand, and there's no way you'd know. There's no way you could know, because there's nothing in the system that a committee is forced to confirm that the data that they are sending to you is accurate. The only way that you're going to find out is if somebody shows up and does an audit. And we all know you don't have the resources to audit all the committees. Frankly, I don't want you to have all the resources to audit the committees. But I'll tell you, from a political CFO's point of view, our reports, we make every attempt to ensure that if you were to take the cash on hand that shows up on that report and compare that to the reconciled bank balances of every federal account that committee has, they're most likely going to match to the penny. There's nothing in the reporting system that does that. So when you talk about FecFile and helping to ensure as best you can, that is one step that gets you closer to that. But there is that overriding issue. If the committee had a form if the commission had a form where an individual committee, just like I go home at the end of the month and I reconcile my personal bank account, I'm going to have a here's what the bank says I have, here's the outstanding deposits, here's the outstanding disbursements, what am I left with? I think the FEC report should do the same thing. This is only a guess, but I would suggest 65-70% of the FEC reports that are filed today, the cash on hand is not accurate. But you would never know that. There's no way you can know. But any steps that would get you closer to getting to that point, I think, are useful, particularly with FECFile.
In addition to having campaigns saving campaigns from themselves, because if they do get audited, that's going to come up, or if they discover it after the fact, they're going to have to file an amendment, and then that could trigger an audit or worse.
And from a practical,
it helps public disclosure, right? I mean,
absolutely.
The public doesn't know, and if you're telling us that a lot of these reports are not necessarily accurate because, well, the software we provide is tough to cross-check.
That's right.
It's really easy just to, you know, if somebody has a bad day and forgets to type things in, and that, you know, and this is really far afield of sort of a website hearing, but it's stuff on the website here that's public disclosure, and it seems like it's an issue that...
But also, I think it's something that could be solved by a simple report addition to FECFile. FECFile,
right.
Currently, you know, there are so many things that are complicated that are required for disclosure that FECFile embodies. So I don't think there's a reason to throw that out. What there is go take, like any enterprise that is releasing some kind of software, you want to listen to people like Paul, people in the user community, and say, okay, what would be a nice, useful addition? FECFile, in my statement, I talked, though, about all the types of data that a more full-fledged commercial campaign software program manages. You know, we have integration with an accounting, with multiple accounting software. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. You're not going to build QuickBooks out a campaign version of that. You don't want to infinitely extend to every possible need of a campaign. But there are, so, you know, you have to look at who are the audience for FECFile. That's the people who need free filing software, by and large. And what are the modest changes that you can make to that to serve them well? And I think that you could, you know, practically make those changes over time, inexpensively, and serve that audience very well.
Yeah, and I it's important to, by no means am I even going close to suggesting that FECFile should go away. It is a very useful tool. Like I said, we use it. I think it's an essential option for those campaigns that either for whatever reasons or financial reasons, they just can't avail themselves of Nathaniel or anybody else's product. I mean, it's. I would hate to see it go away, and I'm not suggesting that by any means.
Any comments, Mr. Vice Chairman?
Just two very quick questions. My understanding is that FECFile currently only works on a Windows system, that it doesn't work on other platforms. Is that, I mean, as a Mac user myself, has that been a problem, or is that generally should it be made available on other platforms, or is on a Windows platform sufficient?
Just an observation. And FECFile is a single user system. It's not a network system. You could put it on a network, but I don't think you could get simultaneous users. But I think from that perspective, it probably would be helpful if it was usable on a Mac, because you're not really, generally the people who are using that system are not looking to put it on a network. They would put it on their desktop or on, you know, a single workstation on a server or on a network, and that should be relatively easy to do, I guess. And, you know, I'm not a programmer, so, but I think it would probably be worthwhile if you could do it at a minimal, you know, cost.
I think that's a great question and something that the commission should prioritize. Speaking for ActBlue, we consider Windows a security risk. We don't use it. We have a great deal of sensitive data, and we just don't think it's an appropriate starting point for our own data. There are other reasons we also can't use FecFile. We're a fairly unique committee, and there are some corner cases that it doesn't handle, and I don't think it should. I think FecFile is targeted at something different. But I think requiring that particular platform is inappropriate, and there ought to be a solution, probably a web-based solution, frankly, that allows any committee to use whatever computing infrastructure they have.
If I could just ask one final question, something that you mentioned in your opening comments and also that you talk about in your written comments, Mr. DeBurgolis, is this coding of contributors, employers, locations, and so forth, which I think would be very valuable. It would ensure that, you know, someone, you know, that Matthew S. Peterson, Matthew Peterson, and Matt Peterson, which happens all the time on FEC reports, where oftentimes it's from the contributor who maybe changes the way in which they identify themselves when making different contributions. How complicated of a process would that be in order to be able to code those? Are we talking about a complete overhaul, or is this something with a little bit of time and a little bit of resource wouldn't necessarily be reinventing the wheel?
It's an open question, and I think it could easily become a big project, and I'm not recommending that. I tend to think the easy solution is a published standard. The commission considers the following heuristics when it tries to identify similar vendors or similar names. It could take the form of an actual list, right? These things are supposed to be considered the same. It is the case that you're not going to create a master list of all vendors because anybody could be a vendor, right? That doesn't make sense. But there are ways to say, this is how we compare names. These are the techniques we use. At the very least, we upcase all the strings so that we don't have, you know, uppercase and lowercase considered different. We make spacing standard. We take out punctuation marks, or we allow these certain if that's all written down and explained in a clear way, and that's the standard that's used internally for comparing different names or determining aggregate totals, then everybody else can use the same and build on it. The problem to me is when you have competing standards. So Open Secrets considers one technique, the commission considers another technique, and an independent group is forced to come up with their own answer, you know, based on their own opinions. And I don't think that benefits anyone. That's a place where some consistency is valuable.
I noticed you made some comments about protecting the information and salting.
That was me.
Yeah. And I assume we all have the same concern in some regards. But what could we do to we have to give the information out. It has to be public. People, in theory, right or wrongly, can take that information off and do things with it. But what can we do to protect personal information in a better way other than salting, or how can we?
Well, I mean, you already allow salting, and there are some committees that do. I speculated about whether or not, you know, address is required on, you know, for disclosure. It's obviously required for disclosure, but does it need to be up there on the website? We've seen cases where, you know, people have been targeted by one political group for their contributions to another group. So you want to be a little cautious. I mean, I think, you know, I do think you want to err on the side of providing good and complete information. But what I don't like to see is if the FEC says it's against the law to use this data for fundraising or commercial activities, then it ought to provide some recourse or in some way of tracking down when that's happening. And I think if you have a big pot of data and you add in some people that apparently contributed to a campaign, and then that list is downloaded, and then you could obtain information about who's sending direct mail to that list or who's soliciting those people.
I think there was one way in which they searched all of the people that gave from a certain address. It was found to be an interesting piece of information. I don't think we can do that, but I mean, would that be helpful to have that to be able to drill down to that degree from our data?
Well, you have address data. One of the queries or the reports that you don't have on your website right now is the ability to look up by address, I don't believe. So making that available, that data available, exposing that information would allow people to start to aggregate people by that. Right now, you can download the entire data set, and many people do and work with it in that way. But to do it directly might be helpful.
One of the consequences of the internet is that things that the practical ability to work with data very much changes the value of the data. When you ship reams of paper to the commission, they may as well not exist because no one's going to look through those and the information isn't really available. And we see this effect in many settings. I mean, voter registration files are also public record. They list every voter, party affiliation, address, so on and so forth. And 10 years ago, that was sort of irrelevant because unless you were looking for a specific piece of information and had someone in an election office, you weren't going to find it. But now it's simply available, and you could make use of that for any number of things. I tend to think that that's a question for the legislative side and maybe the philosophy department. It's just simply the case that as we publish this information, privacy implications change dramatically once it's in this format, and I think it's something that has to be asked.
I think also if you dovetail between what they're saying on that particular issue, you open up a potential can of worms with as you make more data available to everyone, there's going to be a greater need for salting your names because more people are going to be able to, from the FEC, target a solicitation list or pull a solicitation list in order to target particular donors from this massive database just from their congressional district if they wanted to do that. I only say that because by doing one thing, you kind of compound another problem and potentially make it worse. It's just important to kind of think about it as you're doing it.
One example maybe of how not to solve this problem, though, is the current regulations say that small donations don't have to be reported, right? There's just a big number at the end of the report. And, I mean, talk about an opaque number that no one can tell whether it's right or not. But the trade-off is that perhaps it doesn't make sense to publish the name of someone who only gave $20, right? There's no public disclosure value. I'm not sure I agree with that statement, but that's the current lay of the land. And it may be that there are opportunities for the commission to accomplish its regulatory job by demanding more accuracy or more information, but not necessarily publish the same level of detail. And I don't know whether the answer is to scrub mailing addresses completely, whether there are different thresholds that may make sense. But, certainly as modern campaigning takes us to a place where more and more contributions come from larger numbers of people in smaller amounts, I think we may want to rethink the various thresholds and the different ways that we treat different donor sizes and the kinds of information we collect from those donors.
And it's worth noting that the $200 threshold for being reported is a very different number now than it was when it was established. And if that were something that, was changed according to inflation and you really are only reporting on large donors, I mean, what I don't want to see is, people not contributing to campaigns because they're afraid that information's public, especially people who are just making, reasonable size donations. And I've taken that into account myself, where I've given exactly $200 to someone, but not $200.01. I just don't want, to be hassled as much.
Yeah, that's a hard balancing act. Now it's possible with credit cards and everything that information is so readily available. I know the volume of contributions under $200 was so great this last cycle that people want to know, well, gee, where did that all come from? But that's the balancing act, as you mentioned. When you say publish the disclosure system itself, we should do that. Would that take money?
That's Matt's recommendation.
You could just send it out now.
Do it.
There are lots of reasons to open source software, and there are reasons not to. The typical motivation not to do so is for proprietary reasons, trade secrets, profit motivations, and so on. I don't think they apply here. What I think is valuable is as a reference or a template, a starting point for people to do their own work. And I think one of the places that the Commission could vastly improve the state of affairs is by taking advantage of the existing body of knowledge and the existing infrastructure and simply making it available as a starting point or as a description of how the system works.
So there's no downside from a governmental entity's perspective, as I understand your comment.
That may not be a question for me to answer. There are always consequences to these sorts of things. I'm sure someone will raise the security concern. I don't think it's a valid one in this setting, but it's a discussion worth having. But you know, there are advantages to doing this, and typically what we've found is that disclosure is good, right? The same arguments that apply to disclosing data about contributors apply to disclosing techniques and implementations and so forth. And I think there's valuable perspective there that people could leverage.
Thank you. Are there any comments? If not, I think we've – yes, sir.
In the last session, I think it was Commissioner Weintraub, you asked the other folks that were sitting here, it's like I think it was you said, what do we tackle first? How do you prioritize what it is that you're going to do? One of the things that I noticed in reading some of these comments is there seems to be some commonality in some of the recommendations, and I would suggest that if you took, you know, the greatest common denominator approach in some of these recommendations and then parse it out in terms of what can you do very quickly, low impact or high impact, low cost, you could probably come to terms with some of the things that you can tackle quickly, some of the things that's going to make an awful lot of people very happy very soon, which I think is to the benefit of the FEC. Just that's what came to mind when you asked that question, is just, you know, greatest common denominator in terms of the things that are being suggested by all the people that are suggesting them. And I think you probably could find some of them.
Did you have anything in particular in mind when you say things that we could do that would make an awful lot of people happy fast?
It seems like everybody really, really wants to be able to search disbursements. I mean, I think you all would agree. That's what we're hearing from a lot of people. And that probably would be at the top of my list, quite frankly.
And at the top of my list would be just a revamping of the website. So there.
You know, oh, is that all?
No, I mean, so like how it looks, how it navigates, the information underneath it, to have the website work better, I don't believe is necessarily a hugely costly thing. I think there are a lot of suggestions out there already, even designs of how websites would work better. You have the information. Maybe it's the information's not perfect. You don't have to wait for perfect employer information to display to let people search on employer. You can add more reports that people can look up things that they want without perfecting your data first. There's a lot that can be done, you know, just adding better searching.
But you said I think it was you who said earlier that it's not worth searching the data if it's no good in the first place.
That's Matt's point of view.
Sorry, that's Matt.
But I mean, I think that there's a reasonable point there that you're going to get the more people can search, the more there's going to be a demand for improved information, and you're going to end up walking down both of those roads eventually, I think. But I think you can make a lot of progress on the data display with what you have.
Well, maybe I can close just by going far afield of my written testimony. When we founded ActBlue in 2004, I have to say that the regulatory issues in the federal election law was not a welcoming place. And we, I don't know that that's anyone's fault in particular, but we dove into it mostly out of ignorance. And I think if we'd known what we were getting into, we may have thought twice about what we wanted to do with ourselves. And in fact, we often tell people, you don't want to mess with this stuff. One of the advantages of working with ActBlue is that we make sure things are okay, and we kind of clean up the financial side of what you're doing as a fundraiser so that you don't have to be as concerned about those things. And I can't help but wonder if one quick win – for the commission would be a more inviting and a more welcoming entry for someone who wants to innovate in the political fundraising space. It's a very difficult regime. I think a lot of that can't change, and there are real consequences to doing it wrong, and that should be the case. But perhaps some combination of better presentation of information on the site or a set of documents written with an eye toward, so you want to get into political fundraising 101 sort of stuff, I think may be very helpful, and you may well find that there are new innovators and sort of new classes of activity along these lines that would be more likely to take place if that were the case.
Well, I think if we have all the questions asked, I want to thank you again. This is invaluable for us, as it was for the first panel, to take a look afresh for all of us as commissioners who've not had the opportunity really to sit here collectively and take in information on how to improve our website probably ever. And this has been very edifying for all of us. So, again, thank you. And we'll reconvene at 2:00.